translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Assisted by the descendants of Bhoja, Rishni, Andaka, Madhu, Surasena, Darsaha, Kuru, Srinjaya, and Pandu, Lord Krishna performed various activities. By His pleasing smiles, His affectionate behavior, His instructions, and His uncommon pastimes, like raising Govardhan Hill, the Lord, appearing in His transcendental body, pleased all of human society. Purport. The words Nialokam Ramyam Asa Murtya Sarvanga Ramyaya are significant. Krishna is the original form, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is therefore described here by the word Murtya. The word Murti means form. Krishna, or God, is never impersonal. The impersonal feature is but a manifestation of His transcendental body. Yasya prabha prabhavato jagat andakuti. The Lord is Narakriti, exactly resembling the form of a human being. But His form is different from ours. Therefore the word Sarvanga Ramyaya informs us that every part of His body is pleasing for everyone to see. Apart from His smiling face, every part of His body, His hands, His legs, His chest, is pleasing to the devotees, who cannot at any time stop seeing the beautiful form of the Lord. Om Adyanatim Varandasya Jananjana Salakeya Chakshoho Milatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kaupatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanabeyo Vaishnavabeyo Namo Namaha. So, what I wanted to do, with your permission and blessing, was really, in as best way I can, is discuss certain things experienced by myself and others, that especially recently, is this thing that people call, it's like a, almost like a midlife crisis or a depression in the midst of their devotional service. It's very interesting. And when we experience these times, it's a bit like coming to, I don't know, there's a place called the doldrums where there's no wind for the boats. Nothing was, the boat was stationary. And we didn't know where the winds were going to start the boat again with its sails. It's a time where you're completely in the hands of divine providence. In those days, anyway, and it's a thing that somehow that probably the more experienced devotees have experienced through their stages of devotional life. There's the initial enthusiasm that gives us this impetus to do practically anything. You know, we'll surrender. As they say. And I can remember personally, when I first came here, I said, the first thing I must do is, whatever comes after this course, is do what they ask me to do. And of course, before I came here, there's one service I saw and observed as an outsider coming in, was Jan, I can't remember his name now, but he's yeah, so, sorry, Jivadoya Prabhu. Yeah, Jivadoya Prabhu. He was temple commander, so-called, you know. It's a title that is almost intimidating in itself. But I saw him searching desperately for people to do service. And I saw how much he was suffering, you know. It was really difficult because I said, no, I'm here to do some chanting and reading, you know. I can remember that. And I saw the look on his face. And so I thought, this is one service I never want to do. So when I first came, I did the Bhakta course, and Sitaram said to me, I'll see you, we'll make an appointment, we'll see what services are available and what you can do. And then the temple commander at that time, Patanjali Muni, as he was then, he wanted to change his service, he wanted to go to cook. And he said, would you like to try this temple commander service? I thought, oh no. I really thought, you know, this can't be. This is not possible. You know, but anyway, I sort of made that like personal vow to myself. I couldn't really get out of it. And so I said, I'll try. And Patanjali Prabhu, he held my hand for a while, you know, first few weeks, and was guiding me. And he's very methodical and organized in everything he did, actually. So in a way, he cleared the path. I was very fortunate in that way. You know, he was organized, and I saw that what his organization did was helping with a service in such a way where it would help others. In other words, that he would be able to serve people for their needs, not what he wanted to do. He was committed in that way. He had that attitude. So, it was very noticeable. So, you know, I thought, well, this is a wonderful attitude. He's got this thought that maybe people count more than maybe what I'm doing. But I still, through those initial stages, went through great difficulties because I thought, no, I've got to chant my rounds, I've got to do this. And I used to say no to certain things and so many things. It caused me so many difficulties, actually, until I got used to the service in some way. Still, there's problems. But, you know, life goes on. So, I'm looking at two examples here. There's Arjuna on the battlefield with Krishna. And there's also Vasudeva. He was composing all the literatures. Vedavyas. He was composing all the literatures for the Vedas, and he went through a point where he came, look, I've done so much, I'm following these regulative principles, all the religious rules and regulations, like Arjuna, Dharma Sastra, they all knew the worship rules and regulations, but somehow something was missing. Arjuna encountered it by the, as Prabhupada explains, he was put into illusion. And actually, all of us, in some way or other, that where we get to a point in our devotional service, where somehow or other, that we're in the regular service, but then, somehow or other, we're put into illusion. Similarly to Arjuna, that somehow there's a time when we can't see what we're supposed to be doing and what the point is, that somehow we lose our direction. And it happened to me. I know the particular reason was because of offenses, an offensive mentality which transformed itself on the tongue and manifested. And it was a very difficult period which I had to go through. And I'm still going through if I'm not careful. But the only way I could understand that what was happening, that somehow by the will of the Lord, I'd become proud. I became self-satisfied in what I was doing. And that somehow or other, I was being judgmental internally of every situation and every person. It caused me so much grief, actually. So Arjuna, when he was on this battlefield, and I'd like to just read a few of the verses, because they encounter the feelings, and which is very important, that we experience in our devotional life, because we have to recognize our own feelings and what is happening. And it says, he says here, he asks first Krishna to pull up the chariot. Let me see all these people who have come here to fight. And he saw both parties in the presence of all the chieftains of the world. He said, just behold, this is Krishna, he says, in the presence of Bhishma, Drona, and all the chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold, Partha, all the Kurus assembled here. And Krishna, it was like, it was asking him to look. And this is the one thing that Krishna does, is that somehow he gets us to look out there and see what we're doing and see what's happening, and somehow from a position that we feel stable in, he then says, look. Then Arjuna could see within the midst of the army as of both parties, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, friends, sons, grandsons, friends, and fathers-in-law and well-wishers. And this is a difficult situation, because he's in service. He's a fighter. He's going to fight with them. He was convinced, let me see these people that have come to support evil-minded Duryodhana. So there was determination there. But then he's seen all these people. When the son of Kunti saw all the different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion. That's an interesting thing. Something had changed him. He's a Kshatriya. Kshatriyas are compassionate because they're the defenders of the persons and people. They have a position. But like a father or a king, they have responsibility. They have to do certain things that are painful to others to maintain certain rules and regulations. And so everybody, they're put in a position of responsibility, or think they're put in a position of responsibility, they go through a dilemma. And it says, the father who does not chastise his son, both go to hell. And so in a position of responsibility, you can see what the spiritual master can go through. He has to chastise his disciples. It means discipline. And so, and it's a most unenviable position. Likewise, but Krishna, he smiles. Somehow or other, he has this detachment later on. After Arjuna going through so many reasons why he shouldn't fight on Dharma Shastra, and if this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he surrenders. But it's a wonderful sort of surrender, because it's Arjuna says, now I'm confused about my duty. He He says, I've lost all composure, and due to miserly weakness in my condition, I'm asking you to tell me which is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So he thinks, yes, I need guidance. He's come to that conclusion. And then he says, I can find no means to drive away this grief, which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like that of the demigods of heaven. There are certain things where we get to a position in our devotional service that actually things aren't satisfying us anymore. So what's the point? So what's happening? I'm stuck. I'm in a difficult situation. I'm seeing things, obstacles, that weren't there before. So then Sanjaya said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of the enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. Now that's after he immediately surrendered to Krishna, which was an interesting situation that a lot of people may find themselves in when they take shelter of the spiritual master. All of a sudden, they're asked to do things that maybe they don't want to do. But they almost said, they come up with reasons why they can't do it. All of a sudden, you know, but what about this? But what about that? You know, instead of saying yes. You know, so there are dilemmas. Because this point at which we take initiation, or everybody may, if they follow the process, come to a point of initiation, they'll struggle after initiation. Shri Radhakul Kul Nandaki Jai, Shri Gaur Nitai Ki, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. So there's a struggle. Then with the reality of having to do what we're asked to do. Now the thing is, we should understand that instructions come from Krishna, and they come through authority. And this is the dilemma, where we think we have the choice. People become stuck. Because inside, we know, I speak for myself, I know that I'm supposed to follow instruction. I'm asked to do certain things. But at the same time, I'm given advice that I don't take. So I start to fall into a hole of my own self-making. I remember dear Mother Kalangadi, she said, always take the humble position. And I wasn't. I was struggling with that. And all of a sudden my tongue would say something that would be judgmental, scathing, and most unconstructive. In other words, it created opposition rather than cooperation. So this was my personal thing. And of course, it was to do with pride. All of a sudden, somehow or other, these things creep in that we think we are the judge, that we know what's right and wrong, but we don't see the person in front of us. This is the problem. We don't actually know that person. We don't see the person, that they're a human being, that they're volunteers, that they've come here to serve, but somehow we have to understand what's going on. And we jump to conclusions for that which we cannot see. So, the interesting thing about Arjuna, he said he wasn't going to fight. But it was at that point, following that statement from Arjuna. Now, the spiritual master, they're very composed, usually. He said, O descendant of Bharat, at that time, Krishna, smiling in the midst of both armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. So the spiritual master, by dint of experience, he knows what a disciple basically goes through. So inside he may be smiling, and outside he may be very strict. But it's there. There's this understanding with the disciple of what is happening. Now, and obviously by dint of experience, they know that everybody seems to go through stages in their life where somehow or other, in their service, we become a little bit proud, a little bit haughty, and frivolous. We've lost our sobriety, you know, our seriousness. And it's taken over by this pride. So this is Arjuna's dilemma. So then we go to Canto 1. This is very nice, where Srila Veda Vyas, in chapter 4 of Canto 1, he feels some incompleteness in all that he's achieved in doing these Vedic literatures. Incredible feat, incredible knowledge, incredibly realized. He's the Supreme Lord, come in the form as Veda Vyas, and yet somehow or other he's in the pastime of depression. He's unsure of himself. There's something wrong. It says, I am feeling incomplete, though in myself am fully equipped with everything required of the Vedas. This is what can happen. We think we're complete, but somehow or other, we're not. So, this may be because I have not specifically pointed out the devotional service of the Lord, which is dear to perfect beings and to the infallible Lord. So, he sort of knows what's happening. We see what's going wrong when we start to stumble and start to feel that we're stuck. And it says, I read once, there's a nice quote where it says, the sign of depression is when we're stuck somewhere. You know, we're in the doldrums. We're definitely in the doldrums. The boat is not moving. We're stationary. That somehow or other, that we're without guidance. There's nothing happening to us. We're not in touch with the Lord. We're not in touch with our authority. We think we are the authority. That I can row this boat across the ocean without wind. It's you know, we're stuck. And so we need the divine providence, the wind, to assist us in our boat again when we're stuck. So he says here, as mentioned before, Narada reached the cottage of Krishna Devipiana Vyas on the banks of the Sarasvati just as Vasudeva was regretting his defects. His savior has come. It's a really amazing thing. Super soul is there within the heart. Now, if we're crying in our depression, in our difficulties, whatever they may be, this is when the Lord will hear, if we pray to Him. But if we think somehow or other we have to do it by our own ability, then we're going to be staying stuck. We have to share our difficulties, and we have to realize we're in difficulties. We have to admit our imperfection, like the alcoholic. They have to admit, I'm an alcoholic, before they get to the stage of changing their lives. They have to admit it. They don't always admit it. That's the stage that we can get into if we're not careful. So Narada Muni, he comes and he speaks that your inquiries were full of studies. You also were well fulfilled, and no doubt you have prepared great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. You have fully delineated the subject of impersonal Brahman, as well as the subject of knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent in all spite of all this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu? It's like a sarcasm from Narada, saying, you think, you know, you've done all this. Now he's putting the question to him. Why are you questioning? What's wrong? Then he says, Srila Vyasadeva said, all you have said about me is perfectly correct. Despite all of this, I am not pacified. I therefore question you about the root cause of my dissatisfaction. For you are a man of unlimited knowledge due to your being the offspring of Brahma, who is self-born. So he's pointing out to Narada that he has some qualification. He comes from Brahma, self-born. He is in knowledge of the Vedas himself. He's been told the Vedas by his father. And he said, my Lord, everything that is mysterious is known to you, and you worship the creator and the destroyer of the world and the maintainer of the spiritual world, the original personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to the three modes of nature. So he's pointing out another qualification of Veda Vyas. You worship the Supreme Lord. So what's up? Like a sun, your goodness, you can travel anywhere in the three worlds. This is Vedavyasa speaking now. And like the air, you can penetrate the three regions as such. You are good as the all-pervasive surface. So please, therefore, find out this deficiency in me, despite my being absorbed in transcendence under disciplinary regulations of vows. So he's pointing out that in spite of his being in transcendence, absorbed in transcendence, and following these regulations, disciplinary regulations and vows, he's still stuck. So if Veda Vyas gets stuck, that's a good indication that, you know, we can also get stuck, and that certain people are getting stuck, that they're going through personal dilemmas. But as pointed out in this wonderful Bhagavatam here, just before, that Veda Vyas followed the instruction of Narada Muni. He compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. Which was the cream of all Vedic literature. And it says here in text 62, which was just before the two verses, simply by receiving the glories of the Lord through transcendental ears, the devotees of the Lord are immediately freed from strong material desires and engagement in fruitive activities. Our real crux of the matter, and it was spoken to us here by my spiritual master, change of heart. Change of heart comes to listening, hearing pastimes, hearing instructions, and taking them to heart. Actually contemplating, and actually seeing that how we are or we are not doing. And you see, we can go to, or we can hear all the classes in the world, we can hear about these transcendental pastimes, but Guru Maharaj pointed out, if there's no contemplation, if there's no practice of what is said, then we should understand that we're stuck. It's just a superficial exercise where we're going through just reading we're just chanting and there's no taste. We really have to practice this thing, and it is the thing that caused his downfall, for me anyway, was this pride. This pride which killed humility, because only a humble person can learn. And if we're not listening, you know, the answer is blowing in the wind, Bob Dylan used to say, as a famous song. You know, how many deaths will it take till we know that, you know, all the things of this world, the answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is that this world is not our home. That these Vedic literatures are our lifeline. Our spiritual master and our spiritual guides, our Shiksha gurus, they're all those people that are there guiding us through devotional life. So, and these wonderful pastimes, they're there to be relished if we can but relish them. That, in other words, that we read them in such a way that we take it personally. You know, it's like the spiritual master, when he addresses somebody and calls him a rascal, we should take it personally. And also, that each other we should take personally. That somehow we're each saying things to each other, but if we're not listening, we're not taking it personally. Half the time it's a message that the Supreme Lord is speaking to us through others, and that we're not receiving the message, that we just carry on with what we think we're okay, but actually we're not listening, that's blowing to the answer, that's blowing in the wind, that coming from the vital life force from our fellow devotees, that somehow Krishna speaks to us through each one of us, and that we can enlighten one another, and we can help one another in this way. So what I've looked at here, the smiling, is the devotees actually. They're the smile of Krishna. I did want to speak from verse 50 in chapter 13, canto 10, but I'll advise you, if you can remember this, look at canto 10. It's the last verses that Prabhupada ever wrote in this world. And it's canto 10, chapter 13, text 50. And it talks about the smiling of the Lord and its influence on the devotees. It's a very amazing verse and purport. It seems like the time for the class is finished, but I really recommend that. So if you can remember that, canto 10, chapter 13, text 50, and the purport, the wonderful purport. Because this is Prabhupada. He's given us a vital message in these last days, and especially in this last chapter, that there are very many messages about how we should relate to every living being. Not only the devotees, but every living being who are devotees, but covered. If we can see that vision. So, any comments, questions?